think this one, when we get this one, completely changed the atmosphere around the team. So I think this is a big one for us, and we have to go ahead and secure this, go into the bye week, recover, get some guys back, and then go into these next weeks knowing that the pretty much all playoff games.
I'm debating whether I think that is a win guarantee or whether I think that's just a guy who understands the power of messaging and was like a little bit of a double clutch there. Again, he said, when we get this one, it'll completely change the atmosphere around this team. I think that's really interesting. Listen, I think the reality is, if you want to sell anything about this team going forward, anything about this year, you got to win on Sunday. And I'm done. We've had so many different superlatives applied to every game this year. I stopped doing that after the Washington game because it just got, at some point, it just got not interesting to me, because that plus the idea that at some point up until the Baltimore game, I stopped believing this team could compete in games, let alone win them. Well, I just decided to redouble my efforts in another direction. So I'll be honest with you. There's a big part of me that agrees with what Miles says, that I think this is a huge game for the Browns, because a loss, I mean, seven losses with nine games to go is what it is. Like, you have to go, you don't necessarily have to go 9-0, but you're going to have to go 8-1 or 7-2 just to have a chance at the playoffs with the absolute toughest part of your schedule coming up. And I'll go back to, that Ravens defense, where they were really weak is where you were strongest. And I shouldn't say where you were strongest, which is where you were going to try and go in that game. Meaning, you have a big arm quarterback who can make a lot of big plays going up against the worst pass defense, who was missing two of their best players, and it also benched Marcus Williams inexplicably for Eddie Jackson, who the Browns picked on a few times on Sunday. That won't be the case against the Chargers. This is a really good defense, and that's probably going to be a bit of an equalizer here, so it's important that your defense, which is going to be without JOK, we'll see about Denzel Ward, it's going to be really important that you kind of, that your defense shows up in a way that just a different level of crispness that we didn't see for a defense that almost gave up 300 yards to Lamar. Was it 6.5, 7 yards per carry for Derrick Henry? Baltimore maybe runs the ball, which is common sense with the fact that that was such a close game. I don't know that the Browns come away from that game with a win. And again, I don't know that they don't. I'm just simply saying, like, that Baltimore game stops carrying water. And the idea of the Browns is back, or the Browns are dramatically better without Deshaun Watson, a quarterback, on Sunday at 1 o'clock. So I don't know. I sent it out there, at Nick Wilson says, if you guys want to go ahead and chime in on it. It does seem like Miles guaranteed to win there. I hate guaranteeing any kind of win, or even just being like, even something that is like tangibly close to it. And again, this is like a style, because you're 2-6. When you're 6-2, guarantee them all. Like, get it, Cowboy. I'm on your side. Yeah, you're going to win this one. Hell yeah, bleep the other team. You could go up against the Chiefs and I'd feel that way. We'll see. But I'm torn between, I think he's trying to project some confidence here, because he knows the weight of this game. And if you win this game, the playoff conversation will start again. I'm not saying it should, but you would have won two straight games. Then you're going to go into the bye. You've got New Orleans afterwards. That's probably the easiest matchup you've had since the Raiders game. You can really start to kind of get into, okay, maybe you get to 4-6, and if we get to 4-6, can you shock the Steelers? And then you've got the Broncos there. The Broncos, probably the easiest team that you face from December on. It is easier to get where you need to go. All of it's for nil if you can't win this game on Sunday. 216-474-0092. Do you share Miles' confidence in the Browns on Sunday? I have no idea. I'm sticking until they win two straight games in a row. I'm not picking this team to win again. Now, I feel like a dirty pirate you-know-what if I pick against them, so I just won't pick the game. It feels wrong to pick against the team that I grew up rooting for, that I love. But that's another part of what I think Sunday represents. So we'll have more on Miles Sound as we kind of continue on here. But again, the question, 216-474-0092. Do you take that as a guarantee, or do you see that more as a front of confidence for Miles? Of kind of preaching positivity of, well, when we win this game. I do appreciate Miles talking about how big this game is, though. Because it is. The Browns have backed themselves into a corner, and this Sunday is that next step to get out of it. You lose the game, you might not be getting out of that corner. You might get to like one side of the wall, but you might not get out of the corner. Now, speaking of playing yourself into a corner, I got to say, have I told you recently how much I enjoyed the Yankees losing the World Series? Have I done that? Because it feels like maybe a show since I've done that. I did it yesterday, but today's a new show. I enjoyed it for so many reasons, but none so more than the reaction to Juan Soto. Now, mind you, Aaron Judge, $300 million player, was abhorrent in the playoffs. Made the huge center field gaffe that was part of the Dodgers getting back into that game. He hit like a buck 18, very little power. The one big hit that he did have was, what was that, game 4 against the Guardians, where he went oppo on the Class A pitch. But like, other than that, that was like his moment. All the other stuff was not great from Aaron Judge. Juan Soto was actually pretty darn good. Which makes it even funnier that after the Yankees lost the World Series, Juan Soto was asked about whether he would want to return to New York or not, and he gave this gem of an answer.
I don't know what's the teams that want to come after me, but definitely I'll be open to this and every single team. I don't have any doors closed or anything like that, so... Are we going to be available for all 30 teams?
All right, I'm gonna go ahead and hold you to that, Juan, because I'm gonna send the Cleveland contingent. It's gonna be one of the Dolans, not Paul. Sorry, Paul, great guy. Enjoy it. Steven Vogt and MGK. No, I don't, listen. The point is, the Guardians don't have a whisper's prayer's chance in hell to sign Juan Soto. So what he really meant was, I'm open to all 10 teams that might be able to afford me. But I thought it was interesting because the immediate reaction, and this wasn't just by Yankee fans, but it was by like media members who were like, man, it's just wild. Like, you know, the Yankees just lost the World Series and here's their second best player saying he might be willing to go elsewhere. And it, yeah, that's kind of how the other half lives. Like, it's kind of kicking the you-know-whats, right? Yeah, it's really tough when you've just gone on, just come from the playoffs, and somebody asked Manny Ramirez, hey, what are you going to do this summer, man, or this winter, Manny? And he goes, I'm going to sign with Boston. It's kind of rough. Yeah. Yeah. By the way, imagine that happens in like successive years. Imagine like Jim Thome signs somewhere, and then that's after Manny signs somewhere. Actually, I can't remember who left first. I just know I've been abandoned twice by two of my favorite players, and it still stings. But I just thought the reaction, like Juan Soto owes the Yankees nothing. And it's so weird because I've spent the last couple days just crapping on the Yankees' mystique. But this reaction that Juan Soto owes the Yankees more than he would have owed the Nationals, and he told the Nationals, I'm going to go to market and we're going to see how much I can get, more than he owes the Padres, who he told, I'm going to go to market and see how much I can get. The idea that this is somehow a shockwave across baseball is pretty hilarious to me. And like this idea that Yankee fans think they're above losing, and the problem is they've got Stanton, they've got Judge, and they've got Gerrit Cole. And that's a lot of salary, especially because Gerrit Cole can renegotiate his terms because he can opt out this winter. Like, there's a really good chance he doesn't stay with the Yankees. Now, the second best odds right now on FanDuel are he goes to the Mets. Like, so he might stay in New York. The third are the Dodgers. I think the Cubs are fifth. Like, all the teams you would expect that might actually be able to sign him are in the running. As an optimist, listen, I'll be honest with you. For most of my adult life, I've thought baseball will never address the payroll disparity. But I actually think now that the Yankees are getting some of their own medicine, now that the Steinbrenners are going to get, if Juan Soto signs anywhere but the Yankees, the Steinbrenners are going to get dragged through the mud, and rightfully so. Spend money, you dolts. They're going to get dragged through the mud. And when big market owners start to get that, when the Steve Cohens and the Dodgers and a few other teams spend even more than the Yankees, that actually might be a glimmer of hope that at some point we get some way to even the playing field from teams like Cleveland and teams like New York. I'm not holding my breath, but Juan Soto could be the player that sends shockwaves through baseball simply by daring to not re-sign with the psychopathic Yankees and their psychopathic fans. When we come back, what do the Cavs have to prove that they're on Boston levels? What do they have to do, rather? That's next on 92.3 The Fan.